Okay.
So what number and who hosted what?
This is 229.
All right, off you go.
And then. I am the host. I am the hostess with the Twinkie.
With the hostess, yeah.
With the Twinkie, come
Absolutely.
On.
I was going to go hostess frickin' products. Okay.
Okay. What were we doing again? Hi everyone, welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby.
And sorry, this
Did my saying my name throw you?
My voice is really loud in my head, and I was deciding, you know what, I'm going to look and see if I can find a volume control. And then I realized, wait a second, I'm doing a show, so I don't have time for that. So I'm going to put up with my loudness.
Okay, so you're very loud in your own head. Am I very loud in your own head?
You're always loud in my head, man.
Okay, fair enough.
You're always speaking to me.
I want to say thank you to everybody who wrote in with regional and national phrases. And we asked, like, what do you call this in your country? And what do we call this in our country? And we got a lot of those on our Sneaky Dragon page, sneakydragon.com. Thank you for going with that. I wanted to ask you, because you did a little joke off the top, which no one heard because it was off mic and what have you, about hostess, you know, different cakes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to ask you something as someone who has lived in America and has lived in Canada,
okay.
But mostly only Canada.
Yeah, really. Let's.
Okay. One of the, now in Canada, we didn't have Twinkies. You know, when I was a young man, we had to have half moons from Vachon,
okay,
or Jos Louis, or what have you. Very similar products.
Yes.
But when we did get them, they were called Twinkies. So Twinkies were Twinkies, cupcakes were cupcakes.
Sure.
But there was one difference there seemed to be, and that was Ding Dongs.
Yes.
Were King Dons here.
King Don.
Dons, D-O-N-S. But it was the same product as a Ding Dong in the States. And I want to ask you if you remember when you ate Ding Dongs, did you eat Ding Dongs or did you eat King Dons?
Well, I grew up with parents that would never buy Twinkies or Ding Dongs or even King Dons ever. Like, we never had stuff like that in the house.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I never had it.
Like, I've had Twinkies as an adult. But I never had them as a teenager. Never had them.
Now, where I'm going with this is
out the door.
Twinkies, maybe. Twinkies were
through the window.
Absolutely. Either that's my choice, and you know, and because I'd never been born. when we saw the ads for Twinkies, Twinkie the Kid was a cowboy.
If you
Twinkie.
Sure. Or if you read Richie Rich comics or whatever,
absolutely.
The little one page.
And you would then have your cupcakes, and there was no Cupcake the Kid, but you assume he was a personality, or she. I don't know what genitals Cupcake has. But when it came to Ding Dongs, never. There was never an ad for Ding Dongs. There was never an ad
sold
for
themselves.
King Dons.
Sold themselves.
My question.
As soon as someone rang your doorbell, you're like, you know what I feel like?
My question would be, were they called King Dons here because Ding Dong just sounded too dirty?
Well,
like eating your Ding Dong.
Having lived.
Sounds like something from Laugh-In.
Having lived in a city or a small town that had a school called Ass for over 30 years.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think Ding Dong would have rung any bells at all. It would have made anyone, you know, go, wait a second.
You're saying Ding Dong wouldn't have rung any bells. Is that what you just said? It's a good start to the show. That's pretty good. You know what? Dave, say the darndest things.
It was an unintentional pun. I'm sorry, everybody.
We weren't given Twinkies either. The only time we would have a Twinkie is if we went to the States on a vacation, and then like some relative would like break one out or something would happen, and there'd be one there, and be like, "Oh, it's the thing from the comic books, that foils the Joker and stops him murdering people." It's like because he got a Twinkie, and now he's like all happy, and he's not going to kill you anymore.
I wouldn't say foils. I would say momentarily distracts,
which is just enough time for Batman to get the cuffs on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the way every one of those hostess ads went was, you know, someone villain is doing something villainous.
Yeah.
Hero swings in. You'll never beat me. And Batman pulls out the Twinkie from the belt, tosses it. And then he's momentarily distracted. Then Batman tortures him and brands him, throws him in prison, where he's killed because he is wearing the Batman brand. Mm. And the only brand allowed in there is the Green Arrow brand, because they're very fashion conscious in prison. Yes. So
Green Arrow shirts.
That's right. Oh, Green Arrow shirts, like an Arrow shirt. Yeah. Oh, two for two. Well done. Good for you.
Thank you, everyone.
You're really getting the hang of this show thing, man. Let me tell you. Maybe you just needed a week off.
Maybe I needed 298 episodes to... No, we're not 298. What am I saying? 228.
Right. You're coming at it fresh.
29.
We took a little break. 29. Because we recorded one in the Seattle, the States, home of the Ding Dongs. I believe that's their soccer team.
Sure.
Seattle Ding Dongs.
The soccer team. Well known.
Yep. Yeah. So basically we haven't seen each other for more than a week, and so you've had a time to refresh and get sharp.
That's all I needed. Mm-hmm. Just some time by myself. I guess I am. And you know what? Before we go much farther with the show, let's discuss.
Talk about the difference between Smarties in the States and Smarties in America.
Yeah, they're terrible down there. Well, they're not terrible because I don't mind Rockets, which is basically what they are, right? They're like powdered, like little pill-shaped things, right?
Yeah.
But kind of opposite of a pill, because instead of being... convex,
you're right. It's a reverse pill. They're concave. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. All right.
So people don't confuse them with pills.
Right.
They're not like, oh my God, I broke my leg. I better have some pills.
Wait, Dave. Is it concave or convex?
Too late.
Look!
I ate them.
Okay. Well, feel it going down you.
Right. Is it? What is it? Yeah. So I guess that's why they did it, right? Just so people wouldn't get them confused.
Sorry. Yeah. So just saying, and I know you really want to talk about something, but I'm just going to mention a character, speaking of comics, that is one of my favorite dumb characters ever.
Okay.
Cave Carson.
All right.
And he was a character that DC tried to make work, and every so often they try to make work again, and it just doesn't work, because he solves cave-related mysteries and crimes. So if there's trouble happening, and it's a cave, that guy's on it. He's got a machine, get in with his teenagers, because I think he's got teenagers.
Did he have a sidekick who was really dumb?
Probably. He had a beard. I know that much.
I just like the idea that he would just keep calling him a spelunkhead. That would have been perfect, right? You would have liked the character then.
Yeah.
You would have been like, well, that's fine. They've got an excuse for that dumb joke every week.
That is pretty good. But they keep trying to bring him back, and there's just not enough cave-related mysteries or crimes.
No.
No. I mean, if someone's trying to rob a bank underneath the bank, he would be the guy that would dig there and beat them to it and go, ah, no. And then they'd go, technically, this isn't a cave crime. And he'd go, yeah, I know. I'm so lonely.
Here's what they do with that character.
Yeah.
Here's what they do. Every issue of Batman has a short story after it of him looking for the Batcave. And just every week it's the wrong cave.
Never finds it.
Every week. Or every month or whatever.
Right.
That would be good. That's a good use for Cave
Carson. I would
like
to see an episode of Batman where the mansion just falls down through the ground because there's this enormous cave beneath
it. Has that been done?
And that is not structurally sound. They had a thing where an earthquake happened once. And some stuff happened.
Sure.
Yeah. But you have something important to talk about, so I'm going to throw
the floor to
you.
I wouldn't say important, but I just because we had terrible news today that Prince died.
Right.
And I heard it at work. And it's interesting because, I don't know, if it feels like it's the first musician of my generation, you know, to die, like, you know, just to have sort of rock star illness.
So it hits you in a different way than Bowie did?
Yeah, because Bowie isn't from my generation necessarily. He's, he's an older, you know, like when he dies, you're like, well, yeah. You know, when Glenn Frey dies,
he still didn't seem old enough, and he seemed, you know, you didn't know that he was in poor health. But Prince was a shock.
That seemed more like, it seems more shocking because he's 7 years older than me, that's all. So, you know, whereas David Bowie is, you know.
And I don't think we know the
they have not said. They said he went to the hospital a few days ago with flu-related symptoms. Mm-hmm. Was released a few hours later. He actually flew in a private plane to some hospital in Illinois to go for tests there. But then he said he was seen bicycling around his estate, Paisley Park. And then there was a funny moment at work today when a customer picking up some doors, and someone mentioned Prince dying, and they're like, "Yeah, I guess they found him in a park." They're like, "No, it's Paisley Park. That was his estate where he." Lived. His house was, not a park. But it was just that, is that a lot of people thinking that now? Like, whoa, what was he doing in a park? That's weird.
Well, he's allowed to go in a park. He'd be fine. He could go to Central Park.
A little weird.
Really?
Falling asleep in a park, you know.
Oh, falling asleep in a park.
Found on a bench in a park.
It's how people pass away. Uh-huh. They do. You know, this park's in Minnesota, I'm sure. That's where he's from,
but
right?
Not Minnesota? Royalty. Yeah, Minnesota, yeah.
So what? So what was your introduction to Prince like? When did you start? First of all, let me ask: did you enjoy his music?
Oh yeah, I loved Prince. Okay, I went through a huge Prince phase when I was younger.
Okay.
And unfortunately, like him and his career, apparently, I got a little distracted from him later on. But like there was that sweet spot when you know he's just like putting out one great album after another, and that I was all over that. Like, and the first time hearing him. Which is kind of interesting because he wasn't played on the radio here when I was a teenager until Little Red Corvette hit, like the album 1999, which was a big album. It did not come out in 1999, everybody. Like that one, when that was a big hit, then you started hearing him like on CKLG or whatever. But before that, you could hear his earlier albums, Dirty Mind and Controversy, on CITR, the local college radio station or university radio station.
Right, playing alternative music.
Which, luckily enough for me, I lived on a hill and pretty much a straight plane all the way, because like, we lived in Delta, which is a delta, so it's made of sand. And so it was just this big, giant flat sand thing that went all the way across another flat sand thing towards Vancouver, which is also another flat sand thing. And, you know, then so the university.
Which is also one of my favorite DC characters, Flat Sand Thing.
Popular character.
Right.
And
he was originally Flat Stanley and had an accident in the sand and radiation became Flat Stanley. Sure.
And Cave Carson's sand always finding him in caves, right? Yeah. You're standing on me.
Yeah, turn you to glass one day. Yes.
And so, yeah, I was lucky. Living on a hill, I could pick up this really strong signal from the radio station. And so that's where I first heard him. And so I didn't really catch me right away, like, because to be honest, when I grew up, there was a real divide between black music and music for white people, I guess you could say that, like rock and roll or whatever. And you didn't hear black music on the radio station when I was in here, like in the Lower Mainland. You just did not hear. You didn't hear Motown. You didn't hear Stax. You know, you could listen to an oldies time on the radio, the Electric Lunch or whatever, and they would just play, you know, all, you know, white guys from the 60s. So it'd all be Cream and,
it's interesting, you know, you're saying that. Like, I have a very strong memory of watching the video of Thriller when it was first on TV. And it was a big thing. We're going to show Thriller, and they show Thriller. Mm-hmm. And the guy, and it was like a friend's dad was standing there watching it and like saying, you know, I like this guy, but then I really like black music. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we just thought, that's the whitest thing you could possibly say. That I really like. But by that point, yeah. Michael Jackson was so saturated in the culture that you're just like, this isn't even that anymore. This is just, this is the most popular artist in the world.
But you say
even
that.
Even though the album had just started to go down, which is why they released the video, because it was like, how do we keep up number one?
Oh, okay.
But, okay.
Make a 20-minute video.
Back to, yeah.
Well, I mean, so just to kind of fast forward. So when, that was actually the song Delirious that was another single. It wasn't as successful as Little Red Corvette, but that was a song that really caught my ear, right? Because it's kind of bouncy and silly. And I was just like, oh, that's really great. And then I went to the record store to find it, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And so I had to go ask someone, like, can you tell me where Prince is? And like, oh, you have to go to the black music section. So yeah, even at that.
Wow.
Yeah, like even Michael Jackson, you had to go, like the music was segregated in the record stores.
Yeah, I guess about that. Yeah, then.
Yeah, it's hard to remember that, right? Like, but it's weird, like, because my daughters have grown up, you know, listening to my music. So they've grown up with a lot of you know, black music, a lot of R&B and a lot of disco and, you know, Stax and Philadelphia Soul and all the rest of it, you know. So for them, it's weird, the idea that when we grew up, you didn't get a taste for that music. You had to develop that taste. You had to listen to that music and you know, and say, okay, I'm going to like this music. And I'm going to listen to a lot of it to learn, you know, why people like it so much. Because it's weird sounding to my ears. Because I grew up listening to AC/DC and Led Zeppelin and the Beatles. And, you know, even though all those bands were influenced by black music, you know, it was all kind of a different sound. They all kind of changed it.
Yeah, we'll take that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at some points, even like directly lifting, you know, riffs. Yeah. I remember clearly when Little Red Corvette was popular because, and I'm not the proudest guy about this sketch, but it was one of the first big sketches I did on the show I worked on called Switchback on CBC. And the gag was, and again, let me just state, I'm not the proudest guy in the world about this sketch. But the gag was, you know, Prince is going to be here, and I'm a guy who shows up with his dog, Prince, who can do some tricks. And so the host is upset.
Yeah.
And then the host, you know, storms off and leaves. And then it actually turns okay, because the producer of the show, Phil Savath, did the voice of the dog, and he just started talking to me and just like, you know, and just started putting me down for like, this was never going to work. Yeah. It's just like, you should have, and it's like, well, I try, at least I'm trying stuff. And they just, and then the dog just gets up and leaves. The owner called him silently, mm-hmm. and the dog is storming off on me. And we're doing this very tender scene. And yeah. actually it did, that part did turn out pretty neat and it was surreal and it was all right. But then they played Little Red Corvette, which was popular enough at the time that we could do a parody and people go, oh, Prince is coming. That's right. Oh, Prince is, yeah. this is a big deal. That sure. Prince is coming. Yeah, so I remember that time period quite clearly, and I always like that song because, you know, I associate it with that, and also it's a really good song.
It's a really great song. And then of course after 1999, and it's interesting because he really was building his career. And what's interesting with Prince is that he was you know, super talented. Obviously, he was a multi-instrumentalist. Mm-hmm. His first few, I think, almost his first four records are just him by himself. Even when he had a band, he mostly recorded by himself and just used them sparingly during, you know, while he was recording, because, you know, like on his first album, For You, or Prince, no, on For You, he played all 27 instruments by himself. Like he just, whatever, drums, I'll drum, and then I'll play bass, and I'll play the piano, and I'll play the keyboards, and I'll play the water glasses or whatever mm-hmm. else was on there. Those, the first two albums are very, like, very soul albums of their time, you know, this full of like this real, very soft, you know, kind of crooning and stuff. And buying those after I had the later stuff, you know, you're kind of like, well, I've heard them. Let's put those on the shelf. That's good. Right there is perfect. Yeah, it wasn't until Dirty Mind then he started singing songs like Sister and singing about, you know, like, you know, having sex with your sister and stuff. People are like, oh dear. So that, you know, got him attention. Darling Nikki from Purple Rain, of course, started Tipper Gore discovering her daughter listening to Darling Nikki from Purple Rain is what started the PRMC and led to the labeling.
Yeah, I got a very clear Christmas memory of us putting that album on and after that lyric, taking that album off and listening to it with headphones later on. But yeah, that was a Christmas morning that was okay. Yep.
Thank you, Prince.
So there you are.
But, you know, thank you, Prince.
Absolutely.
For putting it out there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's pretty amazing. And like
it wasn't called Prince's Christmas Morning album.
No, that's right.
For families and friends. Purple Rain. It was called Purple Rain.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's fine.
That's a pretty good movie. There's two great things about that film. One is
the enormous motorcycle.
Well, that's it. One is that it's a great film. The other is while you're watching it, you know everyone is just so minuscule. Like they're all tiny people.
Yeah.
Because Prince is like 5'4". So like, you know, I was saying to someone, I said, you know, he's had like an amazing number of really beautiful but very tiny girlfriends.
Yes.
Like
who then later on to have successful careers of their own. Once occasionally getting a song or two from him as well. Mm-hmm. And just like, I mean, that's one thing. Okay. First of all, let me just get back to the motorcycle.
Yes.
That motorcycle looks huge next to him.
Because he's tiny.
But yeah. It always reminds me of Batgirl riding her motorcycle.
Yeah.
If Batgirl had way too big a motorcycle, because Batgirl also rides a purple motorcycle. I'm remembering it as purple. Was the motorcycle purple? Am I remembering that incorrectly? I'm remembering the cover of Purple Rain. Is the motorcycle purple on the cover?
I think it is.
I think it is too. I just know it's huge, and that bike's too big for him. And if he falls off, like sideways on that bike is crushing him, and he's not getting up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They couldn't convince him to use a training bike.
And I remember also at the time how people were saying this is the anti-Michael Jackson. He's the opposite of Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, they're both very talented, you know, singers and musicians and dancers and everything. They kind of position is like he's the dark side and Michael's light and friendly and all that, and he's the, oh, he'll sing about masturbating with a magazine and ruin your Christmas.
Yeah. And how do you do that? If people please write in and tell me.
You shouldn't do that in a hotel lobby. That's not the place to be doing that with a magazine.
Maybe.
But also, isn't it like old-timey that they were using a magazine back then? Kids today.
Is that old-timey?
Yeah, because you'd be looking at your phone now or your iPad.
Oh, I see.
Or what have you. What do you mean, a magazine?
Yeah. I think the magazine was hiding the activity, which you could not do with an iPhone.
You could do it with an iPad Pro.
Maybe. A little bit.
Or a laptop.
Not as effectively.
Okay.
Not as effectively.
You know what you could use? Now I'm thinking is like a fake laptop with a hole in it. Just get one of those IKEA ones, and then no one will know.
You know what else you could use? A popcorn box.
Yeah, but if you're sitting with a popcorn box in a hotel lobby in your lap, then people are gonna wonder what's going on. And maybe someone will ask for some popcorn, and then you're in trouble.
I started watching a stand-up comedian on Netflix yesterday, and about 5 minutes into his act, he started doing a riff on going to the movies with a popcorn box with his genitalia in it.
Yes.
And I was just like, hack, man.
It's too soon. It's too soon in the act. You got it. Maybe wait a little bit to warm us up, but even that is a hack.
We all saw Diner. Like, who are you fooling? Like, come on, that movie came out in 1980.
Also, that's just too complicated.
We've talked about it before. We know
it's too complicated a situation.
No one wants buttery genitalia anywhere.
You know, and I would feel bad if we were talking about the death of any musician but Prince, but I think he'd be okay with this conversation.
Okay with this conversation.
Yeah, I think it would be fine. If he's got an ejaculating guitar, he would not get
offended. Did he have an ejaculating guitar?
Yes, he did. Where he would play the guitar.
Oh, it would just play it.
And then it would shoot what's its...
Sparklers or
let's
whatever.
Not
sparkles, but you know, like, whatever.
Glitter. Do you call semen sparkles, Dave?
I meant like glitter. I call semen glitter.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when people glitter bomb another person.
Yeah.
Okay.
I get very nervous.
Now, the other thing about Prince, first of all, I put up a little clip that was one of my favorite things, which is him on The Muppets Tonight.
Oh, I'm glad you did that. Yeah, I was going to look for that later.
But yeah. It's really charming. You just tell he's having a good time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the Muppets dress up like him old school, like the old school Prince. And he's like, I don't do that anymore, guys. Now I'm mainstream. And it's just playing out mainstream. It's just a lot of really funny stuff. He's at the front desk and there's the bear there who's the security bear. Mm-hmm. And he's like, name, please. And just like, oh, this is going to be interesting. So like, it's just great.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. He's having a good time. Sweet. The other thing, though, that I think always bears mentioning and bears, because he was just talking about bears.
Yep.
It's pretty good.
Nah.
It's not quite Dave level. Now that you're good, you're being a jerk about it. You know, leaving us all behind. Is the amount of songs you wrote
behind?
For other people and like, you know, your Manic Mondays and nothing compares to you. And, you know, there's an enormous list of songs that I can't remember right now.
And that's an interesting story with Sinead O'Connor when she said she went to meet with Prince and he started scolding her for using foul language in interviews. And she basically told him to fuck himself. And he started swinging at her. Like they got into a fist fight and she left. But he still let her do the song. It's really odd. But it's a great song and a great version of that song, too. She does
I'm against the swinging part.
Yeah, it seems kind of odd. Like, I don't know why he was in such a mood. But he was a very odd. Like, I was thinking about him today because he died, strangely enough. But I loved his music. Like, I loved, I have a lot of Prince at home. Like, I have a lot of CDs, obviously. But I also have, like, all his albums. And I have all his singles on long play, like 30, you know, like on record albums, like normal size record albums. Plus I have all his 45s.
Wow.
Because I would just go buy both of them because on the 45s, you got the edits of the songs and you got the edits on the B side. But on the 33 and a third size ones, you got the single, usually the extended version, and then you got two songs in the back. And so, you know, like you got to hear like really long, like on the back of Purple Rain, Erotic City. Super great song. Like it could be on the album. And it's sad that it isn't, but there you have it on as a B-side. So I would make a point of collecting all those because I just loved all those songs so much. And I loved the B-sides as much as I loved the A-sides of his stuff. Like Another Lonely Christmas and that's from Purple Rain as well. I think that's on, people correct me, please.
They will correct you. Wow. I didn't know you were that much of a Prince fan, but that's, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I saw him on the Love Sexy tour.
And?
Which was cool because it was great. I mean, he's fantastic live. And what was cool about that.
That's what everyone says. Everyone says, like, transcendent live.
Yeah, yeah. And what's great, what's really good about him is that he was a fantastic musician, obviously. He could play a lot of instruments, great guitar player.
And can I just say something I really liked about him, too, was when people talked about, you know, how he was so talented. Mm-hmm. Just, you must have really just taken to it. And he would always stop and go, like, no. This was really hard.
Yeah.
I practiced a lot. Yeah. Don't think that this came easy. Everything is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But, he made a point of that.
No,
that's not me saying that. That's
he's
him.
Right. He's yeah. right. At the same time, when he was 7 years old, he wrote his first song called Funk Machine. So, obviously, is already kind of there. And his dad really encouraged him to play music and learn music. And, yes, I'm sure that it was really hard work for him to learn to play, you know, all those instruments. I mean, that's not easy to do. And he's obviously a hard worker, you know, judging from his output and stuff like that. When you think of, like, when I think of his purple period, like when he was at his best, at his greatest, would be from Dirty Mind, Controversy, 1999, Purple Rain, Around the World in a Day, Parade, Sign of the Times. Then it kind of goes weird because he put out
before the Under the Cherry Moon.
Parade is Under the Cherry Moon. Okay. That was the soundtrack for that song, and I love that movie. I love Under the Cherry Moon. Have you ever seen it, Under the Cherry Moon?
I'm trying to think of a head. He did three movies, right?
Yeah.
He did Under the Cherry Moon. He did Purple Rain. Mm-hmm. And the other one was...
Graffiti Bridge.
Graffiti Bridge, yeah. And it was a bridge-related thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Was one a sequel
to
the other?
They played bridge in it. It's basically about a bridge tournament.
Yeah.
That, yeah, at in an old folks' home in a kind of
Trump! Yeah, that wasn't a plug for Trump. I was doing a bridge-related
That was a
term.
Plug for the Harvey Kurtzman magazine.
Another good cut. Was one of them a sequel to the other movie, or were they three?
Graffiti Bridge was supposedly a sequel to Purple Rain. It had Morris Day in it, and it kind of revised a little bit, but at the same time, it's quite a bit different, and it's not very good. And it comes from a time period where I don't feel like he really knew. Like I say, so let me just go on. So Purple Period, he put out this great album, called the Black Album. It was going to be black cover.
Right.
Have No Name.
Remember my roommate at the time, so excited about that. Al Sogstad, so excited about that album.
Then God told him that it was satanic and he shouldn't put it out. Mm-hmm. So then he did a different album. I think they shared one song. He did a different album and he put that out, Love Sexy. I almost feel like that kind of derailed it for him. Like, after that album, you kind of feel like his career starts to kind of... I mean, I know he did Batman, which was a big thing. Mm-hmm. But Batman kind of was almost like revived his fortunes in a way. He was already kind of on the downturn. And then Batman kind of... It was like kind of a brief spike, and then it kind of the slow decline continued. I mean, the only way he could get Warner Brothers to finance Graffiti Bridge was by telling them that it was a sequel to Purple Rain. Hmm. So I don't know how serious he was about that, but so that run is great, and that Black Album is really fun. Like, at the time I bought a bootleg of it. I shouldn't have said that live because now I'm gonna get arrested, but I bought this bootleg of it, and the problem with buying that bootleg is that when I bought the CD, it was kind of disappointing because the bootleg was like two or three generations removed from the original master.
Yeah,
so it was kind of trebly and had some distortion to it. And so everything on it sounds kind of really dirty and cool. And you're kind of like, oh, I can see why it was, it's so kind of cool sounding. Like, everything sounds kind of rough and kind of, has a bit of distortion to it. And that's neat. And then you hear the CD and you're like, oh, it's kind of clean. It's disappointing. But when I saw the Love Sexy tour, which is weird, is that he did songs from the Black Album. He did Bob George, this kind of weird monologue song where he plays like this crazy character. And so it seems weird. Like, why pull the album and then put out the, it just seemed weird. And like, yeah, I just kind of feel like around that time period, he kind of was losing it. Like, maybe, that's enough fame for you. And then you just kind of want to do whatever you want. And maybe kind of sabotage a little bit without maybe being conscious of it. Cause you feel like everything's spinning out of control. So by making weird decisions like that, you're keeping things in your control. Like, I don't know. Cause there's really no explanation for, besides God's saying it was satanic, but that doesn't seem like a real...
Do you think he was being serious about that, or do you think he was...
That wasn't the first time he said that an angel or he had received a message that told him something, so...
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, he's an interesting character. I mean, yeah, like you say, the anti-Michael Jackson, he's saying about masturbation and having sex with your sister and, whatever. But at the same time, he didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't use drugs, like never, so that's kind of... It's this weird sort of dichotomy, right? This really hardworking guy... And I think
I don't know. I mean, that to me, when you're talking about him, when I hear, this guy played every instrument.
Yes.
When I hear that, I think that guy does not do drugs. That guy does not drink. Because I'm projecting on this and so blah, blah. But it sounds like, a control situation. This person wants as much control over everything. And if you want as much control over everything, you don't want to relinquish control through drugs or alcohol, because then you're going to let yourself go loose. And it's like, no, I want it tight. I want it in. I want it this. But of course, you also want to have sex. So it's like, I'm going to control the sex.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what kind of sex we're going to have. We're going to have this music playing. We're going to do this. We're only going to do this. God wants us to do this, this, and this. And this is what I like, and this, and this, and this. And so, but I don't know if he was like that, but that's what it sort of feels like, is like control.
That's possible. I mean, Under the Cherry Moon, which he wrote and directed, Control Freak. And then the album, what's interesting with the album, that's where Kiss comes from, the song Kiss. I'm sure you know that one. That's a great album. Like, he had this arranger named, I think her name is Claire Fisher, or his name was Claire Fisher. Just fantastic arrangements. That's my favorite Prince album, actually.
Played. Okay.
And, yeah, it's my favorite Prince album. I was kind of thinking, Sign of the Times? No, let's go Parade. And then he's, you know, so, and that was like a full band album, you know, like lots of contributions from, Lisa Coleman and Wendy Melvoin, who, you know, were in the band and contributed a lot. And then the next album he was doing, he actually planned two albums. One was going to be called Camille, where he was going to sing songs that with a higher voice and be a pretend woman named Camille for that album.
Oh, wow.
And then the other album had songs featuring like, Wendy and Lisa singing on it. And then he fired them. Other members of the Revolution quit. And then he's kind of, he made Sign of the Times basically on his own, just another album by himself, which was going to be a three album set, but Warner Brothers said no. And so it was made into a two album set. And I think that's also the start of his fighting with Warner Brothers, who felt like he was saturating his own market by releasing too much music.
All right.
And yeah, so it kind of went downhill from there. By the time you get to like Emancipation, which is like a three CD album, and then the Crystal Ball 5 CD set, I kind of lost interest by then.
I mean, again, when I heard the story, and again, it's, you know, from Kevin Smith, so grain of salt, but you hear the story of him talking about...
It's true?
You know, yeah.
It's a true story.
About, you know, doing a video for him, and mm-hmm. then him putting it in the vault, and that's where it stayed. And he does this. He puts things in the vault. In fact, when I told my wife about, you know, his passing today, she went, oh, I wonder if they're going to open the vault now, or what the situation is, if there's something in the will
yeah.
about how this will be released mm-hmm. and over what time and what have you.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you think like, you know, the sad thing is like with something like David Bowie, that's the end of the music.
Yeah.
And for Prince, you're going to be getting new releases, mm-hmm. you know, if the vault does open, you know, for quite a while.
He's released stuff from the vault. I mean, that's Crystal yes. Ball was like a yep. collection of stuff that Warner Brothers wouldn't let him put out. And he has over time.
My feeling is probably, and again, making assumptions here, that he was so creative that yeah. he just needed to get these songs done at a rate that was faster than was marketable.
Mm-hmm.
So put them away.
Yeah.
Stock them away, yeah. you know, and one day they'll be there.
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of jams with people, because apparently people would be invited to Paisley Park and would play with him.
Right.
And then nothing would come of it.
Speaking of drinking, the sirens are going by.
Yeah.
You know what? Listen, if you're a control freak, you don't have to take a drink when this goes by. But try and play your game and guess, is it an ambulance? Is it a fire truck? Or is it a police car?
Mm.
Dave?
It was an ambulance.
That's correct.
You said ambulance?
Yep.
Take two drinks.
There you are.
One other thing about him, and what I think kind of I'm curious about now, is he converted to being a Jehovah's Witness in 2001.
Now, was Michael Jackson also a Jehovah's Witness?
I don't think so. Was he?
Okay.
I'm not sure. You're going to look it up? I don't know that much about Michael Jackson.
He was. Please okay. continue with
I don't know. Talking. I don't know as much about Michael Jackson.
Right. Continue.
Because I wasn't interested. So I'm wondering, yeah, with his illness, because I know he had, he needed to get hip surgery, and he refused to have it done unless it was a bloodless operation, because he couldn't have a Ugh. Blood transfusion. And so I'm wondering if his illness and his passing are related to his refusal for treatment because of what was necessary. I'm just curious. I'm totally...
Michael Jackson was a Jehovah's Witness as well.
Okay. Okay.
Just throwing that out there that once again, the two that were opposite to each other in the media are like, they're both Jehovah's Witnesses. Mm-hmm. They both won't have caffeine. They both won't do these operations. They won't book these things. Yeah.
Yes. I guess Prince was converted by Larry Graham, who played bass in Sly and the Family Stone. So it's kind of, it's interesting. But yeah, he converted. And I can kind of see why he did, because earlier in the 90s, he lost his baby. A baby born, he and his wife, and the baby died in infancy because it had this condition, I think called like Pfeffer syndrome or something like that, Pfeffer, that I'm not too sure what it does. It turns you into a rabbit? I don't know. But
if it wasn't a baby that died, I would laugh more at that, but continue, yep.
But I think, you know, that probably kind of put him in a place where being... He needed something, you know, like some kind of structure like that, you know.
And, now, I know very little about the Jehovah's Witness religion. What is their views on sex? What is their views on, because, you know.
I think they're highly puritanical. And
how does that fit then into that? How does, all these songs and all these, you know, But very, I mean, very sexy.
Sure, but then, I mean, all that stuff he did when he was younger.
Oh, so that kind of eased up, like, later on.
I don't
know.
I don't really follow his later career. I have to be, like I said, once he got to, like, the 90s, and things started to kind of go crazy, where he was, like, you know, he wanted to quit Warner Brothers and was releasing album after album, and, you know, it's hard to keep up. You're like, okay, you go to the record store one day, and you're like, oh, the Black Album came out. Oh, I didn't expect that. Okay, I'll buy that. And, you know, oh, what's come? I didn't even know this was coming out. Okay, I'll buy that one. And, oh, whatever it was called, Diamonds and Pearls, or whatever it's called, the Gold Experience. Well, where did this come from? It just felt like every time you went to the store, there's like another single and a new this and a new the most beautiful girl in the world. Oh, guess I better buy it. Oh, okay. You know, just felt like so much stuff. Like, you just couldn't, right. Even as a fan, you were like, it was too much. Then suddenly, you know, I'm free from Warner Brothers. I'm going to put out a 3 CD, you know, and then you're like, well, that's $30. I can't afford that kind of stuff. And then there's this crystal ball I've lost, you know, and as a collector, or as we're known, a control freak, once you fall off the train,
right,
that's it. You're done. You're not going to buy like I did buy a later one, but, you know, because you're kind of like, I think it was Musicology, what it was called. And I was kind of like, is it still happening for him? Oh, because I saw him on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. He was on there, and it was like a smoking set, right? Like, just, you were like, oh my God, that was great.
And how long ago was that?
Mid-2000s.
Okay.
And I was like, well, that was really good. This guy still got it. I'm going to buy the new CD. So I went and bought it. And I was kind of like, it's okay. It's pretty professional. Like, to me, this is kind of like, well, like I say about Frank Zappa, like, you know, there's something interesting about a band like the Mothers that grew organically, you know, like, you know, there are a bunch of guys, they were playing in a group called the Soul Giants. And then Frank Zappa joins and he's like, hey, I can make you guys a lot of money if you let me make all the decisions. They're like, hell yeah, you make all the decisions. First, we're going to call ourselves the Mothers. Okay, we're the Mothers. And then we're going to grow our hair long. All right. You know, and we're going to do my songs. Okay, we're going to do your song. You know, and then some of the guys are like, this is way too crazy. Like, I don't need this shit in my life. So they leave and some other guys join and people just, and it's kind of this organic thing that grows, right? That's interesting. That's fun because it's got limitations because those old members are not quite as good as, you know, they're not professional, you know, or, you know, concert level drummers or whatever, or concert level bassists. So, you know, they have to kind of fight or, you know, it has to be flexible to their limitations and stuff. So it's interesting, right? It's less interesting to me when you get to the 70s and he's just going to like hire anyone to like stand in for the quote unquote Mothers. And you can just hire like the greatest session bass player and this fantastic trombone player and the hottest xylophone player who can just like, you know, bloop, 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 just whip it off with no problem at all. Like, that's not interesting because it's just a bunch of pros, you know, and it's not about the feel anymore. It's just about, oh, we're playing a lot of notes right now. Like, listen how professional we are. We're making no mistakes. It's like when I saw Paul Simon play with Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan's set was like this rough and raunchy and raw. And he was like totally showing off for these good looking women in the front row. And he's playing his solos too long. And the band was like, you can see the band were like winding up. And they're like, okay, we're going to, it's the end of his solo. He's still playing a solo. Let's keep on going, guys. And it was just like this great organic thing. And then Paul Simon comes out and like first song is Bridge Over Troubled Water, which is a great song. And then I realized, oh my God, I can hear the triangle in this song. Like, that doesn't seem right to me. Like, if you go to a rock concert and the triangle is audible, that
is wrong.
Well,
to be fair, I'm the guy in the back yelling more triangle.
We need more triangle.
Yeah.
But it just feels like all the life is sucked out of it, you know, because you're hearing everything and it's all done so smoothly and everyone's so good and there's two drummers.
Well, you almost feel like, well, I could get the album then. If it's a live show, you want a little something.
I want a little something. I want you to put some.
Yeah.
I want to see a little glitter in it, man.
Something I'm only going to see this time.
Yeah. I want to see some glitter on your pants. That's what I'm saying. I want you to be excited to be
I forgot
playing.
What you called glitter. I'm sorry. I'm now okay. Back on board.
It's okay. But I just, you know, so to me, like, I feel it's kind of the same way with Prince as well. Like, the later stuff, you know, he could hire anyone he wanted. It wasn't like some jerks he met around Minneapolis, you know, like, hey, David Z, you can play drums. Come on and join my band. Hey, Dr. Fink, come on and play with me. Hey, Wendy, come on and join, or Lisa, you join my band. Hey, you got a friend named Wendy? She can come too. Yeah, this is great. And it just kind of grows out of the scene, you know, like Des Dickerson on bass, you know, and then he leaves and some other guy, that's when Wendy Mulvoyne joined. But, you know, so you got like this kind of organic thing happening and it's interesting, right? Because you got different tastes and different attitudes and stuff like that. But when you're just like super big and you can hire anyone you want and they can play the guitar like nobody's business, but that's all it is, just a bunch of, just a cascade of notes all the time. And also, you know, I feel like in the 80s, he was leading the charge. You know, he was the innovator and everyone else is kind of like, oh, we got to keep up with this guy. And then get to the 90s and he's like talking about a song being hip-hoppery. Like, no, you don't want a song that's hip-hoppery. You are Prince. You don't need to be, you know, hitching your wagon to that star. You're the star. Do your thing. You be Prince. Don't, ugh.
Yeah, though you could see a person being bored of themselves, right? Like, yeah. You know, for as much as you've listened to Prince songs, he's listened to a lot more, right? And so when you hear something that you consider fresh and new, you can see how you'd be going like, oh, yeah, let's try that.
You think or is it a feeling like, oh my God, I'm falling behind. I better, you know, hitch my wagon to the star because I don't want to be left in the dust by
maybe.
This new thing.
That feels a little bit more
that's
of
a little, that's a little old manish to me and not innovative.
Whatever artist doing a duets thing and like, who's the popular, you know, young singer, I'll sing with them and we'll sing something together. And, you know, there's a lot of people that do that kind of business and literally try to hitch themselves to someone else.
You know, the revolution was like this, not just multi-ethnic, but also multi-gender, right? It was women and men playing together, black and white. And then later it's like all black people, you know, so it's all, you know, so we kind of lose, you know, you feel like this is the pressure of, you know, having to conform to what you're expected to be as a black artist.
I just think it's so tough to know because, you know, okay, go ahead.
No, I just told you.
I mean, again, we talk about, you know, the Beatles, and Lord knows we've talked about the Beatles. And
not enough.
Maybe more. If people want more, that's fine. Maybe one time in the future. But you can just see, like, these artists who you go, like, oh, don't copy them. Be, you know, you're amazing. Just be you. Mm-hmm. But you don't realize probably that they all had influences that you weren't aware of. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they are sponges as well. But you didn't know what they were sponging before. So it looked like they came up like from nowhere and like they were the innovator. And to them, they're not the innovator. To them, they're the vessel that's like taking the other stuff and putting it forward. So eventually you're going to go, sponge is dry, man. I need something else. What's going on? And if you hear hip hop and just hear that rawness, you know, maybe there's something there that you're like, yeah, that's what I, yeah. And you can go hitching to a star, or you can go, I just want something different. And maybe you just do want something different.
I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that at all. But the thing is,
and if you do have a problem with it, it doesn't matter either. That's fine.
I have no problem with that. And I mean, we've talked about the Beatles, and I said on Completely Beatles, if people care to listen to that 14-year-long podcast.
It's gotten some good reviews.
And then,
Fancier's Aficionado Weekly Magazine. I think they said something nice about
it. Gave it 2 stars.
Yeah. But it was really tough on us having to smoke cigars through the entire thing. Neither of us are smokers.
We're green, man.
But we were really hoping for that good review.
2 stars.
Yeah.
We were in third place tied with some other podcast.
Yeah.
But the Beatles, yeah, once again, I mean, they were interesting because they rode the cusp of this changing scene, right? And so even though they weren't the first psychedelic band, they took psychedelia and innovated it in a really interesting way that only they seemed to be able to do. Mm-hmm. And like David Bowie as well, you know, throughout the 70s, you know, he was incorporating, whether it was glam or, you know, the kind of German krautrock sounds or the new kind of new romantic sounds when he was doing like Scary Monsters. Like all those albums, it's not new. The sound that he's producing is not new at all. I mean, you know, T-Rex was already being glam. You know, Noi or Can or whoever was already being krautrock. There were already Susan the Banshees or other new, I can't think of the bands for a new romantic, but you know what I mean. So, you know, so he's taking those sounds and he's incorporated them to his personality and making it his own. And so when we hear it, we're like, oh, this is fantastic. David Bowie's done it again. Another chameleon change, you know, amazing. But when you get to the 90s with Prince, you don't feel like it's a chameleon change. You feel like, oh, he's just trying to keep up with the, you know, what he sees as the music scene changing around him.
Right.
And it's not him.
Kind of what a chameleon does.
And not him.
A chameleon doesn't make up a new color. A chameleon looks at what's around it and copies that color.
But not.
So when you talk about a chameleon, that's the correct use of chameleon.
But he's not taking it and innovating it the way the David Bowie or the Beatles did it and making it uniquely his and presenting it in a new way that you're like, wow, you know, Prince has taken hip hop and taken it to a whole new level of, you know, you're just saying, well, it's okay. It's okay. It's good. He has a rapper sing, you know, there's a rapper on the song.
I'd be curious what hip hop artists thought of him doing that or.
Oh, I'm sure they loved it. Of a certain age, I'm sure they loved it because, you know, it speaks to their childhood.
It would be an interesting thing to just like, I wish you could like, without saying who the artists are, talk to them and go, when did you start getting bored? Or when did you start when did you go, I got nothing, I got, just like, what's the process like?
Yeah.
From where you become, you're the innovator.
Okay, well, let's take
to where you're the mainstream.
Sure.
To where you're the, oh, well, you're, you know, to where you're almost, and I think with Bowie, you get a little of this too, which is you go like, everyone would acknowledge genius, but you want to hear that new album?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know if I want to listen to the whole thing. Same with Prince. Like, anytime you see, like, a Prince concert's in town. Oh, we should go to the Prince concert because that's going to be a good show. Want his new album? Eh, I'm fine. You know, he's like, I got it. I'm good.
Yeah.
But I acknowledge amazing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. And that's fine. You
sure.
know? And you get to that level. And what's that like for an artist? Like, do they want to keep innovating? Do they still have that kind of rock in their shoe? Never comfortable?
Yeah.
Never, you know, or is there a moment of satisfaction where you go, nailed it. Got it. That's great. Good. Okay, I can relax.
Okay, well, let's take an example of an artist, I think, who had a very low boredom threshold and did innovate a lot, and that'd be John Lennon.
Okay.
And I think you can point to, after Magical Mystery Tour, that was it for him as far as the Beatles went. Like, he could have happily stopped being a Beatle at that point.
Right.
And that he was tired of being a Beatle, of the Beatle sound and stuff like that. Yet, you know, and Yellow Submarine really suffers from that kind of fatigue, Beatle fatigue, I think, for many of them at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's interesting about the White Album, which is still a Beatles album, but, I mean, everyone says, you know, it's basically a Beatles solo album. They're all working on their own things and using each other as session musicians, not working together as a band anymore.
Right.
You know, they were super talented enough that whatever, you know, that chemistry they had together kept, you know, keeps it sounding interesting and fresh. And you know, there's still that innovation and spirit. But once Lennon left the Beatles, you know, you can hear in his albums the disinterest kind of taking over until you get to, I guess, Walls and Bridges or Mind Games, whatever the last one was. And then he retires, basically. He hangs up his singing shoes and becomes a dad. You know, for 7 years or, you know, 6 or 7 years until, you know, finally, you know, the hunger returns and he does Double Fantasy, you know.
But it's tough with that because, you know, all that still happens in such a limited amount of time that you can't compare to a Bowie or a Prince because, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the stuff that you're enjoying from Prince, that's 30 years ago. It's literally 30 years ago.
It is.
So you can't, like, go, like, where would Lennon be?
Yeah.
You know, what would he be doing in the 90s?
Yeah.
You know, how many changes would he have gone through?
Paul McCartney. But see, Paul McCartney
was a different situation, right? And you can sort of go, oh, what do they all do? Okay, but that's probably not what... Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah, Paul McCartney's weird because I don't think he didn't get bored of the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, he got frustrated. He got, you know, he felt stymied. He felt...
Yeah.
You know, just depressed, and it was killing him, and he just had to stop. But
you can see, though, that he's still hungry for something, and I don't know what it. You know, it might
marijuana.
Yeah, maybe for marijuana. Hey, everybody, don't do drugs, or if you do, write some good songs, and we'll enjoy them too. We'll be fine with it either way. But it feels like with Paul
McCartney, don't tell us your dreams, though.
Yeah, please don't. You know, he still wants it. He still wants to make music. He still has songs in him. Whenever you see the behind-the-scenes documentaries where he's... Like, I know you can, in a documentary, make yourself look good. But you can see that there's moments where, like, he's jamming with people. And he's, like, legitimately interested in, oh, that's new. Yeah, no, that. And we'll take it. And you're like, yeah, he's still that guy.
Yeah.
That's still there. He has the moments where, you know, he walks into a room and, like, you're God.
Yeah.
And you've got to acknowledge it. And you got to pretend... You know, everyone's acting cool, but they're all like going, be cool, be cool, be cool. And he knows it. And he knows he's going to do a joke now that's going to like make you okay. And now I'm going to lead you in so that I can get to talk to you like a bit of a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
But I know you're still like wanting to take a selfie.
Sure.
At some point, I acknowledge that this is what it's like.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure, you know, Prince was in the same situation or Bowie was in the same situation.
Of course. And they're also so super talented that that you'll frustrate them because you'll be going down a boring road and they don't want to even think about it. You know what I mean? So they'll dismiss you almost cruelly because you have been trite or
could
mediocre.
Be,
Oh, not could be, for sure. Like, I know Paul McCartney is very demanding, very sharp, and very pointed in his criticism of his musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because he's a mean person. It's just that he is a, you know, a consummate musician who's always trying to seek the highest level.
Well, there's no time to fuck around.
And that's exactly right.
Yeah, time is money. Let's get this
done.
Don't
give me garbage. Give me your best.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's fair. That's fair enough.
That's totally fair.
As long as he doesn't punch them, everything's fine.
Well.
Paul's never punched anybody, I don't think.
No.
Okay.
No.
Liverpool boy might throw a shot.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah. Who knows?
I'm sure when he was younger, he was
And then a couple of hush bucks, and no one knows about it. On a complete side note here, but it, because it's a question we actually
do got. Do we have to go up in front of the judge? This is a sidebar?
Sure.
Okay.
Please go on. Your Honor, I'm not a lawyer. I walked into the wrong room.
Please leave my court.
I'm the pizza delivery boy.
I came to play tennis
and
I got confused.
Do a porno, and I'm very upset with how this went. So let's just take it a step at a time. We had someone, speaking since we just got onto the topic of the Beatles,
yeah.
We had someone write us and ask about the song Come Together and the rumor about Come Together.
Yes.
That the lyrics were actually about the Beatles themselves. And what do you think of that? I've got no opinion because I've never thought about it in my damn life. But
well,
help yourself.
I never thought about it until I read it. And I feel like
I don't know which of our listeners wrote that, but thank you for your correspondence.
If you read the lyrics for the song,
Here Comes Old Flat Top.
Here Comes Old Flat Top. Obviously writing about who's it writing about?
J. Jonah
it's
Jameson.
It's one of those it's one of those things where it's like reading your horoscope where you ignore the strikes. Mm-hmm. And you only see the corrects, you know, the, well, I can't think of the word, right? But
right.
You know what I mean? Like, so if you're,
you only see the hits, you don't see the misses.
You don't see the misses. Like, you your mind puts them aside. So you create a theory. You're like walking down the street one day and you're like, you know what? I wonder if Come Together is written about all four Beatles by John. I bet you that's what he did.
Right.
I'm going to go and I'm going to ignore the fact that the song was originally written for Timothy Leary as a campaign song for him. So let's just put that aside entirely. We'll forget about that part of it. And now let's go with my pet theory. And now it's time to build it up.
Right.
So I'm going to read these things. And I'm going to say, flat top. Well, obviously that's George. Because George drove a car with a flat roof. I can't prove that. But it's possible that he did. And I'll just state it as a fact now. And then no one will ever be the wiser. Because who's going to be bothered to check it out?
So
right?
You are not buying this.
I'm not buying it. No. I don't think Lennon wrote in that way. I mean, he liked to break puzzles. Don't get me wrong.
And sometimes he liked to copy posters.
Glass Onion.
Yeah.
That song is all self-references, right? But
yeah, that's where that's the only thing that I think gives the theory a bit of legs is because you've got that.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh, maybe this was a little more of a subtle way.
You know,
of
it could
this.
Have been. Elements of it could be references to other Beatles and stuff like that. Because you know, he put parts of his life into all his songs. I mean, Happiness is a Warm Gun. Mother Superior, well, that was his name for Yoko. So he's talking about Yoko Ono in that song, right? Mother Superior. Jump the gun. What does that mean? We don't know. You know, and it could just be that he liked Mother Superior. And so he just took those words that he applied
and they
flow
to. Well as words.
And yeah, and just put them into the song because it, you know, like he just, you don't know. Like he was, there's a great, great, great interview with him in Rolling Stone magazine from around the time period where the White Album was coming out. And he is like the most, exhilarated, excited person. He's just full of glee about the songs that are going to be coming out on this album. And he's talking about Glass Onion on it. And just, he's just chuckling at how people are going to be puzzled by this song. And it's just fantastic. It's a fantastic read. And, and so, you know, I wouldn't say that it's not, but I don't, you know, but I think knowing Lennon that he would have said something if it was like he did not hide what he was trying to say in songs.
Okay.
And so I think that song just kind of exists as it is.
So Dave thinks no.
Yeah, I'm going to go on the no side.
All right. If you have more evidence out there.
I'm not going to say it's unreasonable. Okay. I'm just saying I just.
Do you think Yellow Submarine is about someone's penis?
Definitely.
Very good.
It's a well-known fact that Ringo Starr had a yellow penis.
And all the ones that live in it are sperm.
Glitter.
And they all, ooh.
And then, but I mean, you know, there are songs that are about the Beatles. I mean, there's that great Ringo Starr song, Early 1970, which is just about him and his relationship to the other Beatles. It's a great song. It's a B-side to a song, Back Off Boogaloo, probably.
If someone wants to start their own Beatles podcast, the Autobiographical Beatles might not be the worst idea in the world. There.
What, would that,
our
what would that be? What would that be?
All the songs that have any autobiography.
Oh, okay.
In them.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Or hell, you do a spinoff. Knock yourself out. McCartney's in town, I think.
Time to
get your microphone. Go talk to the guy.
Mm.
Though we brought Jimmy Fallon on the stage, which
here,
yeah,
that's too bad.
Yeah, that was my this guy Guy McPherson, who I sometimes well, we were on his radio show.
We were on
course.
His radio show, yes.
But he was doing a good news bad news situation. He was talking about like you know bad news. I don't have tickets to Paul McCartney. Good news, I found a scalper. Bad news, he wants this amount of money. Good news, I talked him down to this amount of money. Good news, I got good seats. Bad news, the only people that are standing in the whole place are standing in front of me. You know, good news, the music's still great. Bad news, Jimmy Fallon's joining him for the encore. Yeah.
And so did Jimmy Fallon do Neil Young?
I think they were doing Come Together, actually.
Come Together, okay.
Yep. Speaking of.
Here comes Old Flattop.
And you could have just gone, hey, what's this song about?
Grooving up slowly.
We were kind of curious. Question from the back. We're not taking questions. Could I have a sidebar, Your Honor?
We got to ask.
Please approach the stage.
Yeah.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a fan of the music.
Paul, which Beatle had jujube eyeballs? Who is the Holy Roller?
Yeah. No answer. One of the families who are in Pony Club with us, her father played bagpipes.
Isn't the first rule of Pony Club
that you ride a horse?
Okay.
Her father joined Paul McCartney on stage to play bagpipes for Mull of Kintyre.
Oh, nice.
The only problem
is, here's
the bad news.
Did Paul McCartney want him to?
Here's the bad news.
Go ahead.
People had to listen to Mull of Kintyre.
Burn. You've been mull burned. Paul did say, please join me on stage.
Yes.
He wasn't around with his bagpipe in the audience, just waiting. Just waiting.
Jumped on stage.
Normally he hangs out in the front of big country concerts.
Here's a question.
I know the lead singer has passed away since. I'm sorry. Rest in peace.
Here's a question
for you. Lead
singer
of big country.
Stuart Adamson. Is that his name?
I just know in a big country dream stay with you.
And he played a guitar that sounded like a bagpipe.
Is that right?
Yeah.
We learned
a lot. He played like a particular way that had that kind of bagpipe sound to it, right?
I just remember he came on Switchback once
again, did
the
he?
Show. Yeah, and
with
and
his
so,
spiky
you know,
hair.
It's like, you know, they had the song playing, and then it was like, so, you know, asking questions. And it was just like such a thick accent, you could not wade through it. You could just not wade through it.
Yeah.
You know, and so, the host had a real difficult time just getting anything. And there was a couple of the other members of the band that were there. And we're shooting live at 9 in the morning, which is the best time to have a band there.
Oh, rock and roll musicians love 9 in the morning.
I think Loverboy fell asleep once during the show. Yeah, terrible. But then they would go, because Good Rockin' Tonight was directly across, the host for that, sometimes the host was the same host.
Mm-hmm.
Later on it was, but they would go across afterwards and just record their thing there, their interview, and like, we're done now. We're done with all of it. And then they go home and go back to sleep.
The bleariest interview of
absolutely.
All time. Now, this is my question for you. This is a serious, hard-nosed question. What do you think of the bagpipes? Do you enjoy like a bagpipe band in a parade?
The only time I did enjoy the bagpipes were when James Lloyd and I were in Spain, and we were brought on stage we're part of an art festival that was there. That was celebrating comic arts, and it was in Gijon. And I'm not a fan of the bagpipes. Let me answer that question. Do not like them.
Okay.
We were up there, and they had a bagpipe band next to us playing while we were drawing, and I was like, oh, no. But it was really beautiful, and it was I don't know why. It was like, I know. I remember that the bagpipes were blue, and they seemed a little smaller than the Scottish type.
Okay,
and they just had a nicer sound. They were very kind of soft and worked. But yeah, we drew while the bagpipes played, and it was a very nice experience. And people watched us draw. It was very surreal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really nice memory I have of that. So those are my favorite bagpipes. But traditionally, no, it's a sharp sound that gets into my teeth.
Oh, interesting. I love the sound.
Makes your teeth feel like they're going to fall out.
I love a bagpipe because I like the bagpipes, but I really also love the drum sound that it has, that really sharp.
Okay. Have you ever played a bagpipe?
No, I have not.
Really?
I have not. No.
You should give it a shot.
Nah.
Why? It's kind of interesting. I have. And I got the, you know.
Yeah.
Listen, there's only one reason to not be a smoker.
Yeah.
Okay, two reasons. You don't want lung cancer.
Yes.
But the second reason is so that you got good lung capacity so that you can blow a bagpipe. So your many years of good, healthy lunging, you'd probably do fine.
Yeah.
Your lungs are ready for that. Go for it.
So when you play the bagpipes, you've done this. So now
you
got to
blow first. Blow them up.
You
fill that bag.
Fill up the hack sack, as it's called, right?
Blow up some balloons first. Warm yourself up. Then get that. Yeah.
So you fill it with air.
You got it.
Then you have to keep blowing air into it, right?
You want to then blow air to kind of refill as you go.
Yeah.
But you're pushing in, and then you're moving your fingers on the pipes themselves. You're playing like a reverse recorder.
You're playing the chanter, like the thing that goes down into it.
Yeah. And again, it's the chanter itself. You got to blow in a certain way. And
it sounds very calm. When we were in Scotland a few years ago, quite a few years ago now, I guess, we went to Highland Games. And which was interesting, but there they had bagpipes at four different corners of the field.
What?
bagpipe guys playing, which I thought was kind of funny. I was like, well, kind of funny if someone's here didn't like bagpipes. They're like, I'm going down this end, so I can't hear them. And they're like, more bagpipes, where? You know, so that would have been good. But I didn't see anyone like that, because I guess everyone loves bagpipes in Scotland. And if you don't,
yeah,
you're not at Highland Games.
No, I find bagpipes are very similar to me to, and it sounds weird, but to an accordion, in that it's something you got to carry mm-hmm. with you. It's yeah. a bunch of business.
Yeah.
And it feels like, well, there's easier ways of dealing with this.
Yeah.
Like, look, if you want that sound of blowing through a pipe, there must be an easier way than filling a big bag of air. And same yeah. with accordion. It's like, the keyboard sounds lovely and whatever, but there must be a better way than like...
But you know what's weird?
What's that?
Is the accordion. Like, we know the accordion, like polka music, right? Accordion, right?
Or klezmer type music. Yeah, yeah.
Every culture in Europe has accordion music.
Yeah.
Like in Scotland, you can have your bagpipes for sure, but... Everyone I knew who was like of an age that they would listen to music that was accordion music.
Right.
They all played accordion. Like, they'd be like, we want to come over for like a barbecue.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like, and they go over there and then they have the tape player playing and it's playing accordion music.
Right.
Know? This instrument travel because it's an incredibly versatile instrument. You can do so much with this little box that you can, you know, squeeze together, buckle up and take with you somewhere else.
Easy to carry.
Take it out, and then you got it going. You can sing. You can have cymbals on your feet. You can...
Right. And also, if you're, say, at a pub, you'll be able to be heard. Mm. You can always hear an accordion. Yeah. No one goes, turn up the accordion. I can't hear it.
Yeah.
More no accordion.
No one says that ever.
The accordion just it makes itself... I mean,
what's the definition? What's the definition of perfect pitch? Throwing an accordion into a dumpster and not hitting any of the sides.
Wow. Folks, I couldn't be... We have just lost Jeff Berner as a possible future guest.
Why, is he an accordion fan of all?
Fan? No, he's just an amazing accordionist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's like plays klezmer music. He travels cool. around Europe.
I'm, by the way,
he is the
I'm joking.
Brother of...
Toby Berner.
Toby Berner, who has been on the show before.
Former yeah. friend of the show.
Yep. That is not how you put it. So deep in the show that we should know that that's not how you say that. But yeah. No, he's a very well-respected accordion player and plays amazing. He used to be in a band called Terror of Tiny Town.
Okay.
And they played some really good accordion-type riffs. Did you ever hear that band?
No one. I've seen the movie, though.
Okay. Well, I think you would actually like the band. I may send you links via the YouTube.
Thank you.
Or I may give you a cassette. We'll see. Either one of the two.
Wow. Going back in time.
Right. But today I gave you a couple of other things.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll just address those a little bit before we wrap up.
Sure, sure.
So you've got two books in front of you.
Two books. One is mine.
Right. And one
is thine.
One comes from... a person we have, it's from two people. One of them we've had on our show before, Shannon Wheeler.
Former friend of the show.
Right. And when he was on the show last time, he was plugging, he wouldn't stop plugging the book.
Oh my gosh.
God is Disappointed in You.
Yeah.
Which was Stories from the Bible.
Really good book, actually.
Did you? Okay. Well, yeah. Really I never really it. Asked what you thought about the book. Let's talk about the original book then. Your thoughts on that book, Dave.
Fantastic. Like, in terms of someone's...
First of all, what is it?
Well, basically what... It is the author of the book, which isn't Shannon Wheeler, is a guy named Mark Russell. What he did was he took the books of the Bible and kind of condenses them down to their nugget, the kind of the theme, the essence of the stories. Yeah. But with his particular point of view, right? So it's his interpretation of the stories. You have to be aware of that when you're reading the book. But it's interesting and you can kind of see how little he appreciates the Old Testament. But how much he appreciates elements of the New Testament, like that part of the book is a little fresher feeling than a lot of the parts of the Old Testament.
Well, this is how he described when I went to see a panel with him recently. He described both of these books. Well, I'll tell you, it was free with admission. how he described it was, you're at the bar with a friend and they ask you, what's the book of Job about?
Yeah.
And like, okay, I'm going to just explain it to you. So the deal is, and it's trying to explain the Bible to a friend.
Yeah.
And make it interesting.
But...
And of course, you got your own perspective.
Exactly, your own perspective can't help but creep into it. And
It's a friend telling you what they think of the book. Yeah.
But it is good. Like, I mean, if you never want to read the Bible, but you're interested in like kind of the gist of it, it's a great way to get that. And I enjoyed reading it because I enjoyed his take on it. You know, because he is editorializing throughout it. He can't help himself, so it's interesting. So, what's really interesting is that. He has put out a new book, which is called Apocrypha Now, which is funny. And I guess it's the Apocrypha, which is the books of the Bible that aren't officially part of the Bible.
Now, where did these come from?
So they're not from the New Testament. They're all Old Testament prophets who were regarded as being out, being past the age of the prophets. So they were left out of the, I'm pretty sure they're left out of the Talmud. And of course, they're left out of most Protestant Bibles, don't have them. The Catholic Bible keeps the Apocrypha as part of its, as part of its Bible, because some of the stories in the Apocrypha have prophecy about Christ. So they're kept in that Bible. But the Protestant Bibles, for whatever reason, cut them out. And so they're kept as the Apocrypha, which means stories that are not part of the actual Bible.
Now, I'm trying to remember when he was talking about these. Some of these were discovered fairly recently, or is that not correct?
There is...
he was talking about, like, someone found them and, like, destroyed some of them, and but some were saved, some of these stories.
Okay, well, okay, I didn't realize, but he does have some books that aren't part of the actual Apocrypha of the Bible, which is the Gospel of Thomas, Gospel of Judas, Gospel of Mary the Magdalene, the Acts of Thomas, and then a Thunder Perfect Mind. So I don't know all of these.
Okay.
I don't, Gospel of Bartholomew. So I don't know those ones, because there are...
I wish I remembered more clearly what he was talking about.
Biblical tradition. So what you have is because the Christian church was a large, spread out population of people, and with two main groups kind of battling each other for predominance, maybe three, but let's say two: Antioch and Rome, and maybe somewhere in Greece. But anyway, those were the two main ones. So there's a lot of fighting between those guys. And so one group would be like, I think Jesus is like this. And the group would be like, you're stupid. Jesus is like this. And be like, no, you're stupid. And they fight and they tear up each other's books and everything. And so, you know, so the Gnostics who believe, we talked a little bit about the Gnostics a while ago, who believed in like the Christ is only a spirit, not a body, because the body is evil and, you know, it's prone to rotting and the flesh is bad. So don't be fleshy, be spiritual. And
don't be fleshy.
And okay. So Christ wouldn't have been in a body because that's just gross. No gods. God is not going to inhabit our corrupt frame, mortal frame. Blech. So he's just going to be a floating spirit floating around. Ah, look at me. I'm the ghost of Jesus. And so that's what they believed, right? So in order to press their views, they wrote their own kind of gospel stories. So the Gospel of Thomas, Gospel of Judas, stuff like that, reflect a Gnostic view of Christ. So Christ is like a secret keeper. You know, he's got this secret little thing that he'll only tell you, not the other guys. They don't need to know all this stuff. Just between you and me, brother. You have the secret. Now you have to go there and tell everyone how special you are, because you know everything. And so, yeah, you know, as part of the battle between these two groups, those books were banned by Rome, by the main part of the church. But the guys who wrote them were like, I'm not getting rid of this stuff. So they went and buried them in the desert, which is a perfect place to preserve paper. And so all this stuff have come up over time, have been found. But most of them date a couple hundred years after, like, the original books were written. Like, you know, so if we accept, say, the earliest gospel, the Gospel of Mark, probably written between 60 and 70 AD, so around 30 years after Christ. And even then, you start seeing sort of mythical elements creeping into the stories, right? And as you read the later and later books, there's different elements that kind of come in that, you know, sort of things, people piling stuff on. No, it wasn't just a cave. It was a temple with a giant door, and there was like a bunch of angels all around it, and the rock broke in half. Wasn't this rolled away? It broke in half, guys. When you get to like the
and
gospel.
It was a finished crossword puzzle and it was done in pen. And pens weren't even existing yet.
That's right.
It's good.
And so, you have these elements creeping in. So you can imagine like just within a span of like, you know, say, so Gospel of Mark 60, 70. And I think most people put like John 90 to 100, maybe a little older. Just depends. It depends who's figuring out. If they don't like the Bible, everything's later. If they like the Bible, everything's earlier. That's pretty much how you know how they're going to date it. But, and so these books are like a couple hundred years after, you know, people just kind of writing stuff down. And the reason they're like the Gospel of Judas or the Gospel of Thomas is because, unlike the Gospel of Mark and the Gospel of Luke, where you're like, who are these guys? They're not even disciples. If you gave it like a name of someone who was well known, Mary Magdalene or Judas, people are like, oh, Judas, what did Judas have to say? You know, Thomas, well, this is real because it's Thomas talking, guys, not just nobody. Interesting thing about in the Thomas stories is he goes to India and teaches Christianity there.
Are you saying you doubt the Thomas stories?
I'm a doubting Thomas about Thomas.
Okay.
I am.
Now the
book, I'm just a little dull. If you read them, those stories, you can see where they kind of go off what I would consider like mainstream. You know, if you accept, some of them sound similar to what Jesus said, but some of it, you're just like, well, that doesn't sound like Jesus at all. Although when you read the Bible, you're like, which Jesus is this? It's a weird story. Like, what is he trying to say? This sounds scary. I don't like it. But yeah, so it's, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I don't want to say that it's totally false or wrong, but if you read those stories, you can really see like mythical elements or legendary elements really been introduced into them.
And
like stuff
this...
like Judas swelling up and like not just dying, not just hanging himself,
yeah,
swelling up so big that he plugs a passageway in the market and then basically explodes with all his entrails flying everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how you die if you betray God. You just don't get to hang yourself in a field. You have to swell up and then explode like you're from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, I'm now realizing how much Willy Wonka stole from the Bible. They were all very biblical punishments. Yeah. But this book, Apocrypha, now is taken a little bit of a, I don't want to say lighter side, but it is. There's a comedic look at things.
Sure.
And then Shannon Wheeler, who is best known for doing a comic strip called Too Much Coffee Man.
Yes.
Does spot illustrations that are very funny.
Yeah.
And you will enjoy.
Yeah.
So that's
gets you through it. That's that one book.
And the second book.
The second book is, this is yours. This is, as I said, mine and thine. This one is Mary Wept Over the Feet of Jesus, which, by the way, I love that title so much because it's so great. And it's subtitled Prostitution and Religious Obedience in the Bible, written by Chester Brown. Chester Brown writing about prostitution.
All right.
What?
Dave, wait. We're talking about prostitution and the cops seem to be here.
Uh-oh. Look out, everyone.
Okay. Once again, everybody, take a drink of whatever you want as the thing goes by. I'm betting this is an ambulance, but go ahead.
Seems to have gone in a different direction.
It has gone a different direction.
Just to say, I loved, even when I was a young person and I didn't believe in the Bible, was an atheist, I loved his Bible stories.
In the back of Yummy Fur.
In the back of Yummy Fur, because I loved them, because I loved the weird contradiction between the scatological, you know, weird sex, really dark stories of Ed the Happy Clown, and then, you know, kind of contrasted to these biblical stories.
That were done very straightforward.
Done in a very straightforward manner.
No exaggeration, this is what it said, and it's just presented very plainly. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was interesting. It was a very nice palate cleanser at the end of those stories.
Some of it worked very well. What didn't work very well, he did Mark first. And I thought Mark was very well, but Mark works. Like, Mark is very spot on. Like, it's very short.
You're doing the okay sign right now.
Doing the okay sign.
Like you're the pizza guy in the pizza box.
Turning Italian. Okay. Well, that's not even Italian, everybody. But anyway.
That's a good news.
That's a good. Bene. But then he did the Gospel of Matthew. And when he started doing that, I was like, this is going to be interesting because this is a hard one to do. Because the Gospel of Matthew isn't really a strict A to Z telling of Christ, right? Like what Matthew did was he took a bunch of sayings of Christ and he kind of grouped them thematically and then kind of put them together. And so you get stuff like about, like, you know, the destruction and the this and that of his relationship to God, of the parables, the Sermon on the Mount. But the Sermon on the Mount is not like a real sermon. Like it's not really a record of an actual Sermon on the Mount. Mm-hmm. And if you read it in the Yummy Fur comics, it's actually kind of tiresome because it's just one long list of stuff. And when you just have a guy, and what's interesting, when he did the Gospel of Mark, he drew Christ in a very kind of idealized way, mm-hmm. you know, very beautiful looking. When he did the Gospel of Matthew, he reversed the thing. So now he's got a Christ who's like balding,
large nose,
big pointed nose, very Semitic, you know. So he's trying to give it like a more of a how would Christ look then? You know, if you've seen the picture of people's like build up of what Christ probably looked like, he kind of looks like Eli Wallach from The Good, the Bad, the Ugly,
right?
Basically, hey, Tuco, I'm here for your sins. But and then, oops, what did I do? Oh, I wrecked my mic, everyone. Sorry about that.
Well, that's right. You start being sacrilegious about Eli Wallach. That's what you're going to get.
Took Eli Wallach's name in vain.
And if I'm not wrong, you seem to be swelling up a bit.
Oh, my God. The Book of Eli. And then, he just has this very strident, almost like spitting at the mouth Christ, just doing like this long list of stuff in the Sermon on the Mount. And then you read that, that's when you kind of go, oh, it's not real. Like, it's not, I can see just by dramatizing it that it doesn't work. Hmm. You know, like it's not a real sermon because a real sermon has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Hmm. And you kind of start here and then you build up to the middle And then you kind of get close to your kind of smart-ass finish, and then you kind of give a little bit of a emotional thing at the end, and then everyone goes, oh, yeah, I learned something today. That was great. But if, when you read that, you feel like, whoa, that's just like a steamroller, just rolled over everyone. And I don't think that's what Christ would have done. So I think, you know, what Matthew did was he just took a lot of the, you know, kind of sayings that were, you know, passed amongst the people of the time, and he just kind of put them together, and then also kind of like borrowed from Mark and created the framework of the story.
Now, were those the only two books of the Bible that Chester did?
Yeah. He didn't even finish Matthew.
Okay.
He didn't finish Matthew.
And so his most recent book was about prostitution. It was called Paying for It. And it was about his experiences.
Sure. And if you read it, you paid for it.
That's true. I did pay for it. And his experiences with prostitutes, mm-hmm. and, you know, his attitudes towards them. And then he did some essay work in the back on mm-hmm. the subject of prostitution. So this is now seemingly combining both things, the biblical stories and the last book he wrote, and trying to put together stories from the Bible where there were either prostitutes or women serving men, women in the service of men, those kind of things.
It seems like a lot of latitude.
Oh, there's a lot of latitude. And there's a lot of we talked a little bit before we started here, a lot of confusing messages mm-hmm. if you read these things literally and you know, it's along the lines of like the prodigal son story, where the prodigal son story, to me, whenever I had it told to me, it was the one son, both sons are given money or whatever. And one son, you know, is good with the money. And the other one goes, so long, fucker. And I'm off and I'm going to go have a good time. Woo, woo. And they're like, oh, I ran out of money. I don't know what to do. And I'm going to go back home. Goes back home. And dad's, I'll kill a fatted calf. My son's here. I'm so happy to see my son. Love you, my son.
It's only that. Before he comes back, he does degrading things. So we don't know what it is. But I think he has to look after pigs.
Okay, well,
which to Jews would be like, ugh.
Understood, but I have not. When I was told the story, that was not really a part of it. Because the part of it was, the other son goes, "Hey, what's the big deal? I was here the whole time doing all the work and stuff. Mamma mia, I'm so upset. I'm working the pasta farm.
Okay, non bene.
Yeah, what do you mean pasta farm? And then that's an old Ripley's Believe It or Not bit. What's wrong with you? But then the thing is, you know, he was the lost lamb, and the lamb has returned.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, much more valuable than the lambs who remained. You know, the lost lamb that has returned is greater in the heart of God.
It's not quite like that, but okay.
It's not, okay, but that was what I was told. Mm-hmm. The lost lamb has returned. It's greater in the heart of God than blah, blah. Okay, so the way they tell this story, spoilers, is one son, I'm just going to go work on the farm. Other son, I'm going to get me some prostitutes.
Yeah.
And they enjoy the prostitutes. I'm having some prostitutes. I'm out of money. Fuck. I better get some work because I need more prostituting money and also to eat. And so he's got to work in farms, as you say, and tend pigs and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's like, ugh, this is not working out for me. You know what? I'm going to go to my dad. I'm going to say to my dad, I will work for free for you, dad, in order to get food. So goes, and dad, once again, welcome, come, slaughter the calf. The calf's going, I really get the bum end of this thing.
I should have suspected when they were fatted, when I was getting fatted.
Yeah.
I should have known what the end was.
Fair enough. And so the other son comes and goes like, what's the deal with this Johnny prostitutes over there having all the time?
Yeah.
Full of the syphilis and whatnot. And then, but this time the father says to him, God doesn't want mindless servants.
Okay.
You know, you're just following, you know, what I say. And he's actually out there living life, you know. And so, you know, you were wrong for being a mindless servant. God doesn't want mindless servants, who just basically doesn't want yes men.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. So, you know, and there's another story in there that's very similar. And and that's a little bit confusing.
It's sure, but
I get that God wants someone with free will.
Yeah.
I get that.
Sure.
You know, but the obedient person.
You're getting the libertarian Chester Brown reading of the Bible, right?
Okay.
So you have to take these things. You have to understand.
How do you interpret the story of the prodigal son?
Well, you know.
You don't actually have to interpret it. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not requiring you to do this.
I interpret it the traditional way, the way of. The story isn't really about a prodigal son.
Okay, what is the story about?
The story is about people who I guess, take God, or, you know, walk away from God, let's say.
Yes.
They do not live a spiritual life.
Right.
Do not follow all the minutiae of the laws of Moses, the Mosaic Law, and all the Talmud and the what's it called, the Mishnah, which was, because it's not just enough to have one book. the Talmud. They also have to have this big giant book of commentary that's attached to it.
So everyone likes a commentary track. You gotta have to get the bonus DVD. Get the Blu-ray with all the stuff.
That's
on
right.
It.
Oh man, the bloopers.
You want the gag reel? Yeah. Oh my absolutely. Gosh.
Yep, the unicorn. That's one of the bloopers. Gone. God realized this thing's gonna kill itself just scratching. Like it cannot even scratch itself. It's gonna.
Well, why do you let the what do you call it that narwhal? Why does the narwhal get to live?
It's fine. It doesn't need to scratch itself. It's a fish.
How about the rhino?
Once again,
he's letting these one-horned animals live. What do you give him? Unicorn
horned.
Guff.
It's two-horned.
No, it doesn't. I guess he does one behind the other horn. Fair enough. All I know is it's good for boners.
What?
Rhino horn.
Oh yeah,
it's great.
Yes. Yeah.
Can't blame anyone for doing that, huh? Taking the rhino horn? Well, how could you?
If it works?
Yeah.
If it's magical.
I mean, you got a lot of prostitutes to go with, right? And then come back and say hi to your dad.
There's nothing more I would like to live in than an entire country that advertises it has penis problems. Like, that's just great, right?
Yeah.
Like, I would be like, guys, listen, what are we doing?
When they lower the flag at the end of the day, they go, I know, right? Anyway. And then they spend, like, so much time trying to raise it in the morning, and it just does not go up.
Try rhino horn.
Ugh, ugh, ugh. Okay, so what do you think the story is about, then?
Well, just like I say, so in the story, one person follows all this minutiae and all this careful, you know, and does everything just right. And the other one...
Orthodox, yes.
Everyone other kind of wanders off and lives this kind of weird, you know, tries to live a life apart from God.
Okay. Do you think when
they eventually realizes...
Do
oh
they
my
think
God.
They're sinning while they're away? Are they sinning? Or is it okay what they're doing?
Well, I mean, in the Bible, separation from God is a sin, right? Like to not recognize God as, you know, your benefactor, the chief part of your life is to live in sin.
Okay.
Because that's the beginning of sin. As soon as you start doing that, as soon as you make yourself God, then you separate yourself from people.
Okay.
Right? Because now instead of, you know, being one part of a family, now you've made yourself this individual.
This is my question with this story, because it seems like what the father is saying is, you were not wrong to do what you did.
That's right.
Okay, but it seems like in the previous story, when we say it the other way, it's like you're forgiven and like well forgiven, beyond forgiven to the point where you deserve more than the person who stayed.
But in the story, he says, in the story when the brother complains, he says, you still have your whatever it's called, right? You still have your inheritance.
Okay.
Right? That's still coming to you.
Yeah.
Older son who stayed.
Yeah.
This son left us.
And has returned.
This is something to celebrate. Not something to accuse him. God's mercy is always available. Right?
This is the question. Is like when you're talking mercy, mm-hmm. like it seems like in the story that I'm
hearing. God's grace, if you
okay,
want.
Okay, even grace. Like it seems like you get grace when you have gone and sinned.
Yes, you
and
do.
And then you are come back. But it
seems that's
like
an important thing to know.
That's right. And that's the previous version of the story. Whereas this version of the story, as repeated in like a different story in there as well, it seems to be you have sinned by adhering too strongly to the word of God or the word of your father. That's the sin.
You
have been mindless.
Okay.
When this person has been independent mm-hmm. and gone and lived their own life, God respects that more than you, not mindless, but like the person who is just doing everything you're told.
Yeah.
So that's a very different message than I forgive you. Because one is saying what you went out and did was wrong.
Sure.
One is saying what you did went out and did was right. Mm-hmm. Completely opposite messages, it feels like to me.
The thing is that when one of Christ's main messages in his stories is always... Well, like the story when he heals the man on the Sabbath, and then the priests come and accuse him of breaking the Sabbath laws. He says, the Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So what he's saying there is that these things that are given to us, these good things that are given to us, the idea of having a day of rest, is for us, for our comfort. It's not a task. It's not a punishment that we have to find our way around and make a bunch of rules and mm-hmm. silly rules in lots of ways, like carrying a piece of string that you can measure how many steps you take in order that you don't go too far and break the Sabbath. Little things like that. It shouldn't be a physical thing. It's a spiritual thing, the Sabbath, right? And those are a lot of the stories that he tells are things where, you know, that the Mosaic Code is not God's laws for us. They are man's laws for yourself. And don't put those before God. Don't put man before God. Once you put man before God, once you create something that you put in place of God, you create an idol, right? And once you start to idolize something, whether it's a Mosaic code, a law, or it's a crucifix, or it's money, or it's your record collection, Dave, once you start to do that, you put something in the way of your relationship with other people
now,
and God.
It feels like to me then we're now in really tricky territory, because if you believe in the Ten Commandments, one mm-hmm. commandment is, you know, do not, you know, worship false idols.
Yeah.
So you're saying this is like almost idolatry.
It can
your
become
method,
that, yeah.
Your method can be idolatry. Sure. And yet another one of them is, you know, keep the Sabbath holy. Like to me,
keep the Sabbath holy, but what does that mean? Does that mean when someone falls and breaks their leg that they should lay
absolutely.
In discomfort?
No, I agree that that's correct.
I mean, that's what it became,
but that's
right?
But that's not what it feels like you're saying Jesus is saying. It's not saying Jesus is saying, like, help a person when they need it. He's not saying that. He's saying, don't be too, you know, don't play lawyer ball here on me. Don't do that.
Well, he just healed a person, so I think he's saying it's okay to heal a person on the Sabbath.
Though no one else really can do that kind of specific healing.
But they can heal people.
You can help
if someone hurts themselves, you're allowed
but
to help
like
them
the point
up.
Yeah, but he's not saying that in the
well,
in
he
what
is.
You just said.
Yeah,
okay,
he
maybe
is.
You're not saying the full thing of what he said. But the but you know, saying like don't take it too seriously. But yeah. I'm using a thing from King of the Hill that was like my favorite thing that was ever said on King of the Hill, where Bobby's playing a game and he's like really getting the rules down, and Hank just goes, "Don't play lawyer ball."
Yeah,
that's no fun. It's like you're right. And I always think that when people are taking the rules too exact and to the point where you're missing out on the overall game or the overall
fun.
Thing of life is like, don't play.
Or you're
lawyer
separating
ball.
Yourself from the other players you're playing with. It's supposed to be a fun game.
Well, then let me ask when
also life is supposed to be a fun game.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
all
heard,
your
I've
attention.
Heard, I've heard that no 2 days are quite the same. Life is just a learning game. And if you use your head, you'll always win. And that comes from the show The Edison Twins.
You rhymed all around there.
Well, that was the opening theme song.
Several people who listen to our show have stopped listening now.
Because of mention of the Edison
Twins? Because of no mention of the Bible.
I know.
But
we got
okay.
back with the Edison Twins. They're like, well, that's a...
We know you fast-forwarded through a big chunk of the show there, and we apologize.
Okay. But let us know... but you know what? Listen, if they have left the show and they return to the show, to me, they are better than
the listeners than
the who listeners? Stuck around.
Wow.
I think all you that listen to all this are losers. You're a bunch of losers who listen the whole time. If you turn off the show, I respect you more as long as you come back. But if you don't come back, well then.
That is, you know, that.
We want the prodigal listeners.
That's our Puritan inheritance that we have to work our way through.
Yeah, I'm going to spend my Puritan inheritance on
we have
some
a big,
prostitutes.
We are Puritan traditions, if you prefer. Like, we have a big weight of that we carry around with us that most people, even if they're not Christians, still have to work through because it's so embedded in our culture, you know. And it's embedded in ways that are sentimental and maudlin, as well as harsh and severe. And so it's hard for us to escape those feelings of worthlessness in God to God.
We will be talking more about this when Dave has read the book. Oh, both books. We'll see what more. So, you know, if you want to skip those episodes, once again, prodigal listeners, we're happy to have you back. We'll talk science another time.
Because we talk about that so much.
Yeah, we like to talk about science. Mm-hmm. How about that E equals MC squared? Matter can't be created or destroyed. That's pretty fucking awesome, huh, folks? String theory. What? How about our prime minister explaining quantum computers?
Yeah,
which, to be fair, he was going to a thing on quantum computers.
Yeah.
He looked it up before he went.
He boned up on it.
He boned up on it.
Yeah.
This is a little clip for those of you that don't know. Our prime minister was asked a question about, I believe, like ISIL or something. There was some question that was completely off the map. You know,
first he was asked to define what a quantum computer was.
No. What he was well, yeah. The reporter went. Because it was about quantum computers. And the reporter went, well, I'm not going to ask you to define what a quantum computer is.
Yeah.
But could you at least tell us what the bubble... And it was some political situation.
Think about ISIL. Yeah.
Okay. So there. And he went, okay. So here's how a quantum computer works. And he just broke it down. And yes, one, he was briefed. But two, something you got to realize, this guy was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a substitute teacher. And he's used to this snarky shit. And he's in front of a blackboard, Jack.
Yeah.
And he's on it. And he knows how to teach shit.
He's also a drama teacher.
That's right. Oh, man. And he laid it out. He just quantum bird, just pew, pew, pew,
You forgot
pew.
The third thing there.
What's that?
He also carefully sidestepped a tricky political hot potato of
ISIS.
That's right,
because it was not the time to answer that question at that thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, at the science fair, you don't go, what about abortion, Mr. President?
It was a bit of a dick move.
It was a complete dick move, yes.
Yes.
And he got dicked, and it was ba-boom. It was pretty nice. Dave?
The other thing that's great is Donald Trump finally recognizing my little joke that I made many years ago on Facebook.
About?
That 7-Eleven is an inside job. And I'm glad that finally America has gone up to me.
Yep.
I wish I had done something more with the joke than just make it on Facebook. But
no, you make some fat cash.
Made a lot of cash from that. A lot of likes. I think I got 3 likes on that one that day.
And you're going to take those likes and try to spend them on prostitutes.
I don't have a lot of friends. Actually, I had a lot of responses to my weird, slightly anti-420 post.
What was that?
I said, why can't we Christians have our own day, like, say, 316, a day when we can be sanctimonious and self-righteous? And I went, oh, wait, that's all year.
Yeah.
So I had a little fun. A
little zing.
A little poke.
You can wear that rainbow wig the guy wears. Poke it 420
and a poke at S2, kind of double poke. You know?
Yeah, why not? Good fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's like I do want to bring a thing up, but it's too late right now.
No, it's not too late. What is it?
All right, this was just the thing that... a relative.
You're right. It is kind of too late.
Okay, really fast. This one.
No, I'm just joking. Go ahead.
A relative of mine put this on online, and bless her. But it was a thing about. It was one of these stories, just like the daughter and the father. So the father goes up to the daughter and says, "I see you've got a new case for your iPad." And the daughter goes, "Yes, I do, father." And it's like, "Oh, well, wait, but doesn't this cover the beauty of your iPad up, having this cover on it?" It's like, "No, no, it's fine. It's a very nice looking case." "Oh, I see. But doesn't the manufacturer not want you, you know, get upset by you covering it up like that?" "No, it actually protects it, father. It's fine. It's great." "Ah, oh, I see. And so you like this case?" "Oh, I love this case, father. I couldn't be happier with this case." And then the father goes, "And yet when I ask you to cover up, you know, your body, you know, you get upset by this. And isn't your body more precious than an iPad?" And the daughter fell silent. And that was the story of the father and the iPad case. telling his daughter to put on a longer skirt. Anyway, but then it was saying
that, cover your head in church.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. And then the last part of it was about, you know, people will treat you with respect if you dress respectfully and this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And my thing on it there was, it's okay for parents to tell their kids how to dress, because that's parents' business to do that. But if someone disrespects you for how you dress, that says more about them than it does the person. And also, if you're talking about a fucking iPad case, that's not a dress. That's a protective cup. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what that is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the boy has to put one of those on, because when the puck comes for his nuts, it bounces off and it protects it, and he does end up with, like, shattered nuts.
Sure.
That's what we're talking about when we're talking about an iPad case. It's not a dress, and also you don't have to cover your iPad because society is sexist, so fuck off with that. Anyway, but
that's great. Yeah. Moral of the story, an iPad case is a chastity belt.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening to Sneaky Dragon this week, everybody. We love you. I love you all equally. My mercy and grace is for all of you, not like one or two of you who listen to the show a lot and write to me.
And I love every third of you. Every third one of you. I just love a third of you. I'm not going to say what third of you I love, but it's one third of your body I love. And I'm going to just say that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. We'll say. I'm a Gnostic. I only love the spiritual side of you.
It's a part of your body that Prince also liked.
Feet?
How can these people reach us, Dave?
Everybody, you can go to our website. It's called sneakydragon.com, and you can talk to us on our billboards, message board there. And I love getting comments, and sometimes I even write back. And I did this week. I wrote back, and I made a mistake too. Instead of saying, pull a Yui, I think I said make a Yui. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I always just, it's one of those things where you're like, when you're trying to think of a phrase and you just think of it wrong because you're overthinking.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
And you've been calling the show Sleazy Dragon for about the last year.
I did. Why didn't you do? You should have said something.
No, it increases our ratings.
So anyway, you can write to us at Sleazy Dragon.
No, at Sneaky Dragon.
Oh, sorry. Write to us at sleazyd@sleazydragon.com. You can go to our Facebook page, Sneaky Dragon. You can go to our, can we say Twitter? Are we over the Twitter war?
No, we're fine. Sneaky underscore dragon.
Sneaky underscore dragon. And we have a Tumblr that is an exact duplicate of what I put on our website at Sneaky Dragon. And you can like us there. you can make a little heart thing, and I got a notice on my phone that says so-and-so liked.
And if you're asking, post. Hey, when are you guys doing another live show?
Mm.
We got that confirmed. We're going to be at VanCalf. I wish I knew what dates VanCalf was going on.
It is the last weekend of May.
Right. And we've got special surprise guests,
mm-hmm.
some local, some non-local. and it'll be a lot of fun, and we'll tell you more about that as things progress. But yeah, it's gonna be a hoot. Really looking forward to that. It's an amazing little festival here in Vancouver, and it's free admission. So if you're in Vancouver, please come and say hi and come sit in on that podcast. And also, Dave and I will be tabling there as well.
Yeah, sorry, I was looking at my calendar and I realized I'm not sure actually.
And I realized
what weekend
I'm 60 years old.
I realized I don't know which weekend it is, because there's actually, I can't remember what days it is. So
you
I'm
know what
say.
We're going to do? We're going to put something on SneakyDragon.com. We'll tell you what it is.
Yeah, we'll have it.
Look,
together.
We're out of gas. It's getting to that way too hot kind of time of year,
yeah.
even though it shouldn't, because it's only April.
It's only April.
Yep. We're in the end days.
It makes me think of a movie I saw when I was a kid where the sun, it was like a drought, and the sun was like boiling everything, and it was horrible, and like it was like that. It was like end of the world kind of stuff happening.
Well, or at least some sexy bikinis.
And I was like, no. And I was like, this will never happen. Huh, what an interesting, what a concept. Hmm. Oh, dear.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
We're living in the Twilight Zone.
Yep.
Folks.
Golden Era.
Thank you so much. Golden Era. Very nice. thanks so much for listening.
Listening to my clang associations.
Yes. And we're recording this on a new device today, so if it sounds different,
that's
why.
We recorded it last weekend, too.
I understand that, but they don't know that.
Oh, I should have said it. Broke the magic.
Okay.
I broke the fifth wall.
Finish it.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you. No, we won't see them. We'll see you at VanCalf, and you'll hear us next week.